Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Hi, this is Jerry Donaldson.
And this is Eugenia Stapiro.
And we welcome you back to another episode of the wonderful podcast, of course it's wonderful, of Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Oh boy. Well, we think it's wonderful.
And we'd like to thank everybody because we've had over 400 million downloads of our podcast.
Yay! Woohoo!
So thank you everybody who listens to us, and thank you for giving us an opportunity to continue to do podcasting, because if nobody listened to us, what's the point?
Well, that's what Jerry thinks, but I would still do
it. Because she just wants to interview everybody, but never mind that. But it is a wonderful time and a wonderful effort that people put in to allow us to do the podcast. So should we get started on what we're going to talk about this week?
Yeah, and we're going to talk about zombies.
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 Interesting
it
concept.
Is.
Interesting in terms of how there are many interpretations of what zombies are. There are scary ones. There are funny ones. One of my most favourite movies is Shaun of the Dead, because I thought that was a funny zombie movie. That was really cute.
And I'm not into horror movies, but I love that movie because I guess it was not taking itself seriously, and it was just fun.
It was. I've told Eugenia this is a story when we've over a cup of coffee in the past, but I do remember my really first zombie movie when I went to youth club as a younger person, and I saw The Night of the Living Dead, which was a scary movie. It was the first time I'd seen people pull sausages out of people's stomachs and eat them. So, and, of course, I think it's in black and white, or the one I saw was in black and white originally because it was probably an old film that was put on a projector and see it. But that was one of the movies where the boys came out of it and hid behind hedges and scared the girls as they all went home after seeing the movie at the youth club. So the idea of zombies has been around a long time.
It has, like werewolves and vampires.
They've been around a lot longer in terms of mythology.
They have in mythology, but movie-wise, probably they've had a similar
sort of mummies sort of, were almost zombies, weren't they?
Oh yeah, true, very much. And I mean, they're living
dead.
They're
coming to eat you
or get you in some way.
In some way. So mummies were probably the precursor to zombies. Maybe mummies were just zombies all wrapped up.
Well, I think they were, and you could see that because when a lot of the bandages went away and the flesh is rotting, you probably didn't see mummies actually eating other flesh. But that, I think, too, came out of more movies than it did from literature. That
they zombies walk as slow as each other, though.
They do. They do. It's an interesting thing because it has been there, well, certainly in our lifetime, it's been part of our lives, and it's been part of teenagers' lives. They've had zombies all their lives. And where it's come from, well, we looked up some records, didn't we? We found that
we did a wee bit of research.
We did a bit of not much.
Not
but we
much,
found that
we talk anyway.
But the first sort of word zombie came around the early 1800s.
And it was from an African word that actually talked about Zumba or Zomba.
Yes.
It was about a state of being, wasn't it?
It did. And then it seems that this book that was written in 1929 then took zombie a little bit further. And, of course, then cinema took over and did a whole different thing on it. And it's always been linked with voodoo and Haiti and that. But I actually don't think there is a strong connection there in real life.
Well, I suppose, no. I don't think the cinemagraphic and the legend, if you want to put it, are similar, because as far as I'm aware, the sort of Caribbean zombie was more about slaves working in your farm, and that was probably what about bringing back the dead that way, where zombies in their incarnation now is more about being scary and eating your flesh.
Yes, and more of an epidemic.
Yes. Were original zombies, I think if we go back to the Night of the Living Dead, was it an alien virus?
Right.
So as opposed to these days, it's man-made stuff that we're killing ourselves off.
Yes.
By doing it. And there are some people who are immune to it or haven't got bitten or something. I actually just finished reading a pile of books, which happened to be about a zombie apocalypse. And how someone in it, this was in the UK, he was a member of the government, and he came up with a plan in case there's a disaster. And of course, there ends up a disaster, as it always goes. And there was zombies in that. And that was actually a madman releasing a virus and therefore creating he wanted to do something different. Where others are, we don't know where the pathogens come from. No. It suddenly happened. I have to say, one of the scariest zombie things that I ever saw. I mean, I don't get scared of horror movies. She doesn't like them. I don't mind them. I don't get scared at them. I laugh sometimes halfway through because I think some of the things they do are ridiculous. But I did see, and once again, this is probably because it's got the humanity, the human side in it, is that in The Walking Dead, the very first episode where Rick ends up inside a armored vehicle in the middle of it, and you've got like millions, it looks millions of zombies coming everywhere.
Like, and ants crawling over the whole
thing. And it was just, that was, I must admit, scary, because you could almost see yourself be one person. And it doesn't have to be zombies that are doing it. It could be mob violence. It could be anything that you were stuck in. And that was probably quite impactful. And it made me want to watch the series, the next episode, to have a look at it. So that mass zombieism was quite scary. Now, there is another zombie television show that I like, which is iZombie. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take itself seriously whatsoever.
And it comes from a different perspective. It does, because you don't have that decaying flesh happening. Yes, they are dead, and they're very white.
And they eat each other to learn things. But my favourite zombie is Zed Nation, because that does not take itself seriously whatsoever. And it's my favourite one. I think it looks at the zombie situation much more. Because you have zombies with different degrees in Zed Nation. Mm-hmm. You have your typical zombie who comes after you and tries to, if it bites you, you got it. And then you have the person who is, in fact, immune because of tests that happen. And, in fact, the book I've just read, they had immune people who got bitten and didn't get to be zombified. But in between those that are immune and those that are thing, there's one character who's lucid at time. And you can see still has emotions and still has humanity in them. And they can respond. And out in the middle of, this is why I love Zed Nation, out in the middle of it, they're growing some plants in one episode that is around zombies, and they happen to be sort of marijuana-type plants. And if the girl zombie who actually isn't quite zombified drinks it, she becomes normal, or smokes the thing, she becomes normal, or takes it. So it looks at different ways of sorting it out, as opposed to, and they have, I really enjoy Zed Nation. It just doesn't take itself seriously. It explores different avenues of zombification, where things like The Walking Dead actually looks at humanity affected by the curse.
Yes, it does.
Around them. So we've got those two different perspectives.
What is it that suddenly we've had this surge in people enjoying zombie-type things? Because we now have, in most of the states in Australia, a zombie walk.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think it's because it gets people to act like a twat, in a good way, in the middle of it. They can go, and drag their foot and walk along that way. It has cosplay in it, because you have to get all made
you
up.
Do.
It's got makeup, it's got prosthetics.
It's got fundraising.
It's got gooky blood stuff everywhere, and you can look like a complete idiot and everybody thinks you're wonderful.
Mm.
I think that's the good thing about a zombie. You don't have to, you can be an actor without having to be great.
Yes.
Because the worse you are, the probably greater you are in terms of doing it. So we're fickle humans, aren't we? We have fads. I mean, we had the Twilight teams. We had the two, you know, Team What's-His-Face and Team
Edward and, I just keep wanting to say Team Buffy, you know.
No, Team Buffy. Now, that was that T-shirt that we saw.
Yeah, that's right. Buffy stabs.
No, Buffy meets Edward. And that's it, isn't it?
It's Buffy stabs Edward.
The end. Which would have been good. But
The Walking Dead, and we're talking about The Walking Dead in particular because we have two interviews from people who are, well, part of The Walking Dead phenomenon.
Well, one that is and one's dead, but they're not necessarily walking. That's characters we're talking about. One is from a few years ago, right at the beginning of Walking Dead. We haven't had an opportunity to use the interview, but it's one of the main characters in it, and the bad boy that everybody loves to
hate. Daryl Dixon.
So, and what's really interesting, he's talking about the beginnings of the character and how it was developed for him and from that end. And
because that particular character didn't appear in the original Walking Dead comics. So he wasn't an original character.
No, he was added in specifically and developed through the TV series. But there are second interviewers with
Chad Coleman is our second interview, who played Tyrese.
And he's recently, unfortunately, is deceased.
Yes,
Tyrese.
No longer.
Well, it almost rhymes, doesn't it?
It does.
Deceased Tyrese.
It's one of those shows that I think the script, when the actors receive a script, the first thing they do is to work out whether their character's still alive.
And that's one of the joys of a zombie show, is that you can actually kill a character off by getting them to be a zombie. And if you don't want that character anymore, you kill them off and you're doing it out of mercy because you don't want them to be a zombie. So, you know, you can carry them off and say, yeah, he's dead, as opposed to, oh.
Well, it's one of the shows where I don't think that I've, you know, hey, you know you've got a cast, a core cast, and no matter what happens, that core cast goes along, and maybe one gets killed or one moves away or whatever, but that core cast continues. What I think was different about Walking Dead is there's this core cast that suddenly get killed off, you know, like main characters that you think are going to be there forever, and suddenly they're not there anymore. And they get killed in horrible, horrific, you know, ways.
I mean, that's the thing about the zombie genre, I think, is, in particular in The Walking Dead, because what they're looking at is how humanity reforms itself after catastrophe. Mm. And really, that's what it's about. We're in Zed Nation, they don't care. They do have a cure and they wanted to get it to the right place, but they're not forming, they're traveling and going through. And we're seeing different aspects of humanity, where I think in The Walking Dead is they're trying to reform society.
They do, and then but they always seem to come across like they, well, they do. They, you know, each of the seasons they seem to have reached this sanctuary, and one of them was called Sanctuary, where they think that things are going to work out, and suddenly things just go topsy-turvy.
I mean, I think The Walking Dead is very dark, and it's always got humanity's horrible, basically, is that we don't, it's not quite the Star Trek utopian view of the future. It is the,
not
at all. We are in conflict, and we're always in conflict, and we will never achieve non-conflict.
And we have to fight for our survival. We need to band with a group of people that are like-minded and are willing to help.
And you could almost take it back to prehistory, couldn't you? When tribes were forming and groups were forming and they were fighting over which piece of land with the river beside it that we can eat from and live from and drink water from. And I think that's what things like The Walking Dead do very much. My favourite, Zed Nation, as opposed to iZombie, which is a detective show.
Yes.
And we're only talking about the sort of the three of them that are currently going around the place. Zed Nation is not about, it's almost about the journey, where I think The Waking Dead, no, it's not The Waking Dead.
No, it's The Walking Dead.
Well, they are.
Because The Waking Dead's another show.
But they wake up.
They do wake up.
The zombies wake up after being dead. But The Walking Dead is more about, it's not a journey, it's about...
It was to begin
growth.
With.
But it was in the first season, but I think it's about the growth of humanity and how we can overcome adversity, where the other one is, it's about a fun ride. It's like, you know, Thelma and Louise with zombies.
This series, The Walking Dead, I think has captured the imagination of lots of people.
It's very, I mean, it's in its sixth season. You
know, yeah, that's right. Season, and you wouldn't have thought that it would have lasted.
A zombie movie, way.
And each season has its own sort of dilemma, group of people that they meet up with. You always think, yes, this is going to be the end, it's all going to be okay, and then it's not okay.
Well, it has to be one time, doesn't it, when it's the end?
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll do that before the season ends.
You sort of hope that they will, or they all just get zombified and that's the end of it. You know, we end up with a steal at the end where we don't know what's going to happen to them.
I think with Zed Nation, you could have them all killed and we go, bummer.
Mm.
Humanity is probably not going to get its cure. And that's the outcome, and you wouldn't be upset if that happened, because you'd see it. But I think The Walking Dead is much more invested in we have to achieve and overcome.
Yes. And the character build-up in Walking Dead is intense.
Well, we have an interview earlier that we did with the young Carl.
That's right.
Right when he was young, and look at him now.
Yeah.
He is, what, 16 now
in
The Walking Dead?
Yeah, and about 4 foot taller than
he was. He's a very lovely young boy. So if you really want to, you could go back and listen to that episode with Carl. Listen to the interview with Norman and get an idea of what it was like at the beginning of the series and how and how Chad's character has changed. So you can get a perspective of almost right from the beginning until where they are now and what Chad thinks the series has got to.
Mm.
Because Norman does talk about the beginnings of it all, and Chad talks about when up until his death, which he was a bit disappointed with, I think.
Yes, he was.
I think Chad was a bit... They got rid of Tyrese and they kept his sister.
Yes. But the, I guess the other thing is, too, there are some really gutsy women in this series, and you can't help but love the one that has the big samurai sword. I mean, she's a great character. And lots has been done. I think the
Sid Nation has really strong women in it too, mm-hmm. clever ones, because the leader of the group is a woman, basically.
Mm-hmm.
She's an ex-military, so she has some skills in that. And the clever one is the technology girl, is the communications is there. And both of them have to fight behind by hand. And the favourite weapon of one is a gun, and the favourite weapon of another is a basically a club with spikes. So that's very much hands on hand. And what I thought was interesting, and I must admit I don't remember it from The Walking Dead, is that the younger female in this had to make a decision to shoot her boyfriend because he had been bitten.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we see that kind of thing as poignantly, I think, maybe.
We do. We do see that a number of times as time has gone on. The other thing that's interesting about Walking Dead is the way that it's filmed, because you have characters that sort of disappear going off on treks to do things, and you don't see them for a number of episodes, and then they take and go back to the story that's related to that person that's gone off on the trek. So you sort of see what happened to them at the same time as happening somewhere else. And then they verge back together again, or sometimes they get killed and you don't see them again. But it's quite... If you were watching it just every now and again, you'd go, what is going on? Because you wouldn't understand...
You have to actually make sure you stick with the story. The Zed Nation, and I'm going back to that because, as I said, it's my favourite zombie show.
Mm-hmm.
We have a satellite technician from the army who lives in the Antarctic, who's actually talking to and supporting, in some ways, the people who are trying to get the convict who was under test in the jail about the zombification of everything to a lab where they can try to synthesise his blood and turn into a cure. So we have someone who lives alone in the middle of nowhere without any support, although this dog turns up and then soldiers turn up. So it's a bit, you have to put a bit of thing in to these people who are living with millions of people. And one thing I get from Zed Nation that reminds me of The Walking Dead is they had a storm of zombies, and it was like running over the hill, coming mm-hmm. at them, millions and millions and millions of these zombies. Although, of course, zombies don't run very fast.
No, so they don't run very fast.
You can usually get away from them, and if you're careful, you can dart in between them. So sometimes that's what gets me. I think probably more The Walking Dead, because it's about zombies are easy to actually get rid of if you're resourceful and clever. I mean, yes, you can be caught out with hundreds of them, but if you're careful, you can basically run faster than a zombie.
Mm.
And I think that's what... in terms of why The Walking Dead has gone to that reunification of society and trying to sort it out, where Zed Nation is just a fun run.
Right.
Of getting away from them. I mean, I remember the scene, and it's really horrible, but it's really funny. You know, one of those scenes that you look at in Zed Nation, they have this ice cream truck, and the ice cream truck is driving along with its song going on. So you have these images of innocence mm-hmm. with the sound. And because it's making sound, the zombies are following it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the bottom, they're having this competition, because humans are just ridiculous, of like a shooting duck gallery, where they have to go boom and they shoot the zombies. And they never run out of zombies, because once they hear the noise, they keep coming. It's absurd, but it's probably what some people would do.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they're killing zombies and getting rid of them. But it doesn't send the zombies as that horrible kind of thing. You can live with them by doing certain things. With Walking Dead makes the zombification really scary and horrible.
Yes.
And it's apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Whereas Zed Nation is, we can have fun with these things.
That's
too.
It. Whereas iZombie is even different again, in that you've got zombies living in society and people don't know that they're zombies.
Except when they eat your brain.
Well, they, yes. but they normally do kill people off to do that. But
and they're smart zombies and dumb zombies, aren't
yeah.
they?
Well, they're yes. But this particular, the main character in iZombie becomes a zombie, and then she's trying to find out how she became a zombie and how she can cure her zombiness.
And she's a medical pathologist?
She's a medical student who ends up in a morgue. Have we heard that story before? And because she can, when she eats the brains of the people that come in from the morgue.
After she's done the autopsy.
Yes, after the autopsy.
And she's weighed them and done everything.
Yes, where everything's done. When she eats the brains, A, she needs it for her own sustenance and to keep it going sort of thing, but she then takes on the personality.
And what happened to that pack? And she goes after, like, victims, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Crime victims.
Yes, to try and find out what happened. So she starts taking on the personality of the person who's been murdered or who she's eating the brains of. So that in itself is quite an interesting thing, because every week you have her... It's like Dollhouse. You have her taking on a persona of
Joe
someone
90.
Else. Or Joe 90. So
let's go back further.
That's it. So
English television show about a young boy who puts glasses on and becomes a different thing. Gerry Anderson.
Yes. So you've got that type of zombie. So these people are living in society. People don't know that they're zombies, but they are very pale skin. They usually have very bleached blonde hair. And
albinos, even.
That's it. And they're trying to, well, she's trying to find a cure, yet she's trying to work out why there's someone else trying to introduce this virus that causes this zombification. So
it just shows you should be careful what you do at parties.
Oh, yeah, because this all happened at a party. And you find that out in the credits, so it's not like I'm telling you anything new or, you know, that
happens
you have
in
missed
the first episode.
Happens, but it also is in the opening credits every episode, so because it tells the backstory of what happened. This show, too, doesn't take itself that seriously, and there's a lot of comedic moments as well as a good drama. Whereas Walking Dead, there's no light moments.
No, there's not. And Zed Nation, there are lots of light moments, which I enjoy. I mean, they have the fight scene. They have the typical blood splatter that you see in every zombie movie. And you have the tension and all of those kind of things. But there are bits I laugh out loud. And you don't often do that with Walking Dead.
No, not at all. That's, I think, one of the big differences between The Walking Dead compared to other zombie things that have been around. Movies, I mean, there have been very, very scary movies, but it's, you know, more of a Shaun of the Dead type thing occasionally rather than anything else. Because I think probably out of the vampire, the werewolf, the zombie's always been the dumber of, you know, the comedy relief.
The zombie doesn't have the brains because the brain is dead.
Yes.
You're a walking eating machine, and that's really what a zombie is. So, I mean, I presume iZombie is probably one of the different, most different representations of zombies.
It is. It is because, A, as I said, their flesh is not decaying. They still retain their memories, their intelligence. Everybody who sees them, I mean, even her family doesn't know she's a zombie. They just look at her and think that she's dyed her hair and she's gone a bit strange. It's not that creepy, dragging the foot type thing.
No, or not even that. I mean, one of the scariest scenes I think I remember, not scary, yuckiest scenes in Walking Dead, was probably when half a corpse was pulling itself and it was...
Yes.
You remember that
yes,
one? And
I
you
do.
Shot it. And that was right near the beginning of the show where this almost skeleton was pulling itself along the ground. So because its brain was sort of still intact inside that shell, it was horrible. And they portray them that way, that scary, scary way.
They do. And I have to admit, when I watch Walking Dead, I have it with a remote in my hand because I skip to the character development, but the zombie part of it, I don't like that much. And there's only so many crushing skull effects that I can actually listen to.
Well, yeah, all of them. Which is why I think, to me, Zed Nation with its shooting gallery was a wee bit different. It was competition. They seemed to have that quite often. You'd win a new rifle that you could shoot more with on it, as opposed to we have to kill them because we'll die if we don't.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the interviews now.
Yeah, I think we should let people listen to Norman and Chad.
So we'll start with Norman because, as we said, this interview we've had for a while, and in fact it took basically, I think, season two. So
it's about the development of Norman's character. Mm. So we see the beginning of Daryl, and you hear a little bit about the crossbow.
That's right. And our second interview is Chad Coleman, who...
just recently died. Yeah. Therese.
Within the last year or so has died. So we've got the beginning and the end of a character in a show. So we'd like to thank Oz Comic Con for the opportunity to interview both of these people.
First off, how do you like my sewing job?
Very good.
Bad, right?
I was pretty a zombie cool. attack, was it?
I don't know what happened, but I did that. I mean, I sewed it. Not bad, right?
Pretty cool.
Very good.
So you're a bit of a Renaissance man.
Sort of. I mean, if the rip was any bigger, I would have just thrown it away.
Uh-huh.
But you not only act, but you also have other interests, don't you? You like to... You're an artist?
I just did a show in... I do photography shows all over the planet. In Germany, I do a lot of shows there for some reason. But I just had a show in Times Square at the Wired magazine, their new store in Times Square, and they asked me, first off, the photos, they blew up to like 5 feet by 3 feet.
Wow.
Giant photos. But they asked for 20 photographs of what my time in Georgia is like. So I sent them 20 pictures of roadkill.
Yeah.
And they sent me an email back saying, these are holiday shoppers in Times Square. They don't want to see dead animals with their eyeballs popped out. And I talked them into it, but they're like very beautiful shots of roadkill. And we sold every single photograph for Oxfam. So most of the artistic endeavors that I do, other than acting, all the proceeds go to charities, various charities depending on what's going on.
Is photography your passion?
It's one of them. I've done shows. I've cut rock, wood sculptures. I did a life-size statue of myself out of 8-pound polyurethane thing foam, and built a giant plexiglass box to put the statue in, and then filled it full of rats for one show in New York. Photography mainly because I travel so much, yep. And I get to meet amazing people in amazing places.
So. Arts to acting, which is more is the visual arts in terms of photography, painting, sculpting, your passion?
Well, hopefully they're sort of the same.
Yep.
They are kind of the same. You create a character, you create a picture. It's just something that that was my plan as a high schooler. That's I just wanted to live in the woods with a bunch of cats and paint and stuff. And I just continue to do that while I do this, you know. I love them both, acting and love acting. I love my job on the show.
With The Walking Dead, your character doesn't occur in the comics at this stage.
Correct.
So the other sort of came with probably a bit of a backstory. How hard was it for you to create your own backstory?
Well, it's interesting, and it's a character that Frank Darabont created.
Mm.
I think he's going to be in the comic book eventually. I pretty much had to sleep with Robert Kirkman to get him in.
And that's on tape.
Which I was willing to do. He's a very handsome man. It's interesting. With movies, you know, which is primarily what I did for this.
Yep.
With movies, you know you're going from here to here. So with television, you kind of plant these little seeds and you hope people notice so that they become storylines later on. For example, there was one scene where Carol bends down and kisses me on the forehead, mm-hmm. after I was shot and so forth. Mm-hmm. And when she leans down, I kind of flinch like she's going to hit me. And now we have a storyline that I was an abused child. You know what I'm saying?
And that's coming in part of season two. I mean, in the beginning of season one, we think you're just a jerk.
Right. Well, I mean, even then, he was written very fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. So, you know, I tried to tear up a little bit, you know, between throwing squirrels at people and stuff. You know, because, I mean, as much of an asshole as my big brother is, he's still my brother, you know. So I tried to make him sort of tear up and get angry and, you know, make him not just a one-note guy. So, and then the writers of the show are so cool that, you know, they invite the cast to go sit in the writer's room and, you know, they'll ask questions like, you know, what does Daryl think of Dale, you know, and, you know. So I get to mold his future a little bit, which is very cool of them to let me help do. You
know? And that's not a common thing, is it?
Not
really?
At all. Yeah, not at all. You know, I mean, nobody knows these characters more, I think, than the actors playing them. Even more so than the writers.
Because
I mean,
you emote everything.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes there'll be something written that I don't like, and they're cool enough to work with me on things, and sometimes they blow my mind with these amazing things they give me to do. You know, like, there was one storyline where, after the death of Sophia, can I say that?
Soon. Yeah, soon,
by the time we air this, yes.
After the death of Beep, they had a storyline where I take the drugs that I find in my brother's motorcycle that I know are there. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted Daryl to be more of an Al-Anon member and less of an Alcoholics Anonymous member. I wanted him to grow up in this drug-taking, racist world. But once it's not around me, I don't want to be that guy. Like, I want him. It's something that he always didn't like about himself. It's another chip on his shoulder, just another layer of you know, having this chip.
It's a very complex character to play.
I'm trying to make him as complex as possible. Like, there are even, you know, there's rumors of romances with Daryl, and you know, everyone thinks Carol and I are going to hook up, which actually Melissa and I came up with a spinoff show where we live in Central Park. Bloomberg has announced that squirrels are missing in Central Park. He doesn't know what's going on. We have a little still set up behind a hill, and we live there, and we're, you know, people go by, do you know how to get to Statue of Liberty? Like, what are you looking at? You know, and then we have a song that we came up that goes, Carol is sterile and Daryl is feral, a match made in hell. So maybe that'll be a spinoff one day.
You think? Yeah. You've written a treatment and set it up the line?
I think it'd be a really good show to watch.
Working in...
Could you take our picture? Yeah. Grab his camera, babe.
Working in a show where half the people are dead, i.e. the zombies, is it difficult?
Well, I mean, Greg Nicotero, who's one of the executive producers, and he's our special effects genius, he makes the zombies so well that you see this sad, sick, lost person behind the monster. So once you're face-to-face with them in a scene, it's not just like, monster, kill, run. It's kind of, you feel bad for them right off the bat. And, you know, I mean, I would think most people, I know I am, I'm afraid to get old. I'm afraid to get sick. I don't want to... You know, hospitals freak me out, you know. So there's that element of sickness and disease that's also in the show. So, you know, you'll go to the craft service table and there'll be a zombie like eating Skittles and you're like, what's up? You know, but in the scene, you're really taken back when they're, you know, how lost they are, you know.
Is it difficult to work that, because you're not getting like emotion back other than from them? You know, sometimes when you're on your own with them?
Well, luckily, there's no scenes with us with zombies where we're doing Shakespeare or anything. So, but, you know, the show's not really just about monsters.
No, it's about the growth of people after the apocalypse.
To see a person like Daryl have to get along with people he would never hang out with and earn their respect, and they have to earn his respect, and you'd never know when one's going to, you know, throw you under a bus, so to speak. So, that's why I like the show, you know, it's because it is about these people having to get along in these horrible situations. So,
do you find when you go home you sometimes have to desensitize yourself or get yourself out of the mindset of Daryl and zombies and all that sort of thing? Or it's just a rush?
The only thing I have to do is shower. it's interesting because, in Georgia, I live in Manhattan, which is much different than Georgia, but... When I'm in Georgia, I love it there. But I bought an old pickup truck with dents in it, you know, with big tires on it, like this old white pickup truck. You start to walk a little different. You start to talk a little different. You kind of become your character while you're there. But then you go back to Manhattan, and it's like, you know, like, get out of the way, beep beep, you know, F you. So it's completely different. But I like to get to Georgia early. I like to feel the woods. I like to be out in the woods. I like to get in the mindset of not zombie survivor, but Southern. You know, I like to get my Southern on. So.
Did you have to do any special training for it? You know, like the crossbow or anything like that?
Yeah, they gave me training with the crossbow. You can't fire a live weapon of any kind on set, so I'm dry firing, and they digitally put the arrows in later. There is one crossbow that the tension is mostly let out, so it just kind of goes twink, you know, like a little Nerf gun. Yeah. But that's for if there's a zombie in my face, and they need to see that, you know. But I like to use the real one because there's, you know, how you load it is you put your foot in it,
mm-hmm.
and I like the yep. I like the tension of the real one. So I carry the real one and dry fire the real one unless I'm shooting a zombie a foot away.
So. Is it hard then to shoot something when you haven't got anything in it to shoot? You know what I mean?
Nah, you just aim and pretend it's there and shoot that thing in the brain. But, you know, I mean, it's expensive to put a digital arrow
yep.
in a shot.
Yep.
So if they can get away with just seeing it release, I'll use the soft one. You know, I mean, it's actually the exact same crossbow, it's just the tension's low. Yeah.
And how different is it for you, having worked in movies and now working in a TV show?
You know,
are the skills different?
It's interesting. When I first started to become an actor, you know, you didn't do TV. You know, it's like people would go, oh, I just got a new TV show. And you go, keep trying, man. You know, and now television is so much better than most of the movies that come out. You know, our set feels like a film. It feels large scale, and it's treated like a film, and it's the acting's good, and the writing's good. And you know, it's funny. Somebody asked me if... do I wish that I got cast in Mad Men? And I was like, they don't throw squirrels in Mad Men. You know what I'm saying? There's no crossbows in Mad Men. Although I love Mad Men, but I don't know. Television, it's really fun for me, and I've grown very close to our producers and our writers and our directors and the other cast members. It's like we feel like a family. And when somebody dies on our show, we have a death dinner and. There's tears all around, and it sucks, you know, because we all love each other. So, you know, which is in movies, you know, call me. It never happens. Very rarely do you keep in contact with people when you do movies. But in television, you know, I'll see you in May, you know, and it happens. So.
And you're looking forward to that, as opposed to know the end of a movie. It's done. Go on.
It's done. Forever. Yeah. In television. I mean, we could go in so many different directions for so long, you know, and we have the number one show right now, so
absolutely.
Hopefully this lasts a long time and I stay around a long time.
So, do you like the security of a TV show? Is that good, too?
That's good, too. I mean, I'm lucky in that I've always worked, you know, and I don't have to live in Los Angeles to work. Most of the jobs are cast out of Los Angeles. They call it Hollywood for a reason, but... I put my time in L.A., you know, and I have a son that goes to school in New York, and, you know, his mother's Danish, so it's yep. kind of the middle ground, you know, for both of us, and we both love New York, but the job security is great. I like knowing that I have a job, you know, and I'm not sick of playing Daryl in any way. I'm not tired of it. I'm not tired of the show, so, you know, I hope it lasts forever. I could go out on Daryl Dixon.
Do you think that's a character's... so in depth and gives you so much scope to act that you could do that for 10 years?
Yeah. I could do it, but like the dude in the hallway,
yep.
you know, he's been on television for
Johnson.
A long time and he's great at it. But if Daryl Dixon is the last job I ever get and I just take it to the grave, I'll be happy as hell.
So what after Daryl though? Say Daryl does go on for 10 years, you're really, really rich and famous and everything. What?
I start taking pictures and I start doing my art and stuff. But I mean, you know, I do films. I just finished a film with an Australian lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I do films in between seasons. So I'm one of those people that I just drink a lot of coffee and I work all the time.
You drink a lot.
You know what I'm saying? Like I'm that guy. Like I jump out of bed, and go, oh my god, I got an idea. Like I'm that dude. So you know, I like to work. And if I'm not working, I don't know what to do with myself. I just get in trouble.
Yes, you're a hyper.
Yeah.
Personality.
Yeah, that's me. Exactly. I thought you said hoarder.
No, hyper. Right, hyper personality.
I'm kind of a hoarder too.
Are you?
No.
And are you the MacGyver of The Walking Dead?
You fix everything.
I can fix things. I'm resourceful. You know. And I like the character too because he doesn't really need these people. He could just take off by himself, but. he's finding it interesting to have relationships sort of for the first time. He's kind of like a little kid. So, you know, it's like this family he never had, you know? So he's sort of trying to make it work. You know, like he moves away from camp, but he just goes over there.
Yes.
He's not going too far away, you know? So,
so is it the relationships that you think is the part that people want to keep coming back to watch? Is that what successful in the show rather than a lot of zombies being killed?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, it's the backdrop's, you know, fantastic. But I think it's the character development and the relationships they're having and these little lies and webs that they're spinning in between each other. And, you know, and I think for Daryl in the show, doing things that other people admire him, give him a pat on the back for the first time is a big deal for him. You know, it's a, you know, he and Carol are both damaged people. They kind of gravitate towards each other. You know, he's not waiting for orders, you know, so to speak. He does what he wants. Like, the little girl's lost. He's like, I'm going.
Yep.
You know, let's all get together and, you know, make a plan. He's like, screw your plan. I'm going that way.
Is that part of the mindset, I suppose, of the character Daryl? Because we find out that his dysfunctional family, he disappeared in the woods for 9 days on his own.
Right. I think that story's going to get a little bigger.
Yeah?
He's covered in scars. Like, his whole body, his front and his back have cigarette burns and whip marks all over him. So you may get into that story a little bit more.
Okay.
Well, we look forward to seeing them on the screen.
And next time...
I'm looking forward to doing him.
Well, it's on our cable television here, and it's even on without commercials. That's how much they like it. They actually show it without commercials.
That is so awesome.
They repeat it often, but on the night it's on without commercials. So it's actually like a movie. You know, you're watching.
Can you tell America to do that? Because that's the worst.
Well,
when something happens, you're like, oh, I don't want to see a car commercial.
But you're paying for the cable anyway. So, I mean, they're getting their money. So whether they put whatever on. So it's really cool.
Yeah, that's great. Mm. I'm going to start watching it illegally from Australia.
Thank you so much.
It's been wonderful. It's been a pleasure to meet you, Norman.
Nice
Thank you for your time.
Of course.
First of all, commiserations on the death of your character.
It had to end.
It did, but you had an amazing run.
Yeah, beautiful. Well said. True.
Now, I'm sure you've answered lots of questions about The Walking Dead and other things, but we want to know about Jared much more. You've had an interesting life that brought you all the way to acting. I mean, it wasn't your dream in the beginning? You wanted to be a track star and lots of different things that happened? You've been in...
I don't know who said that, but no, I've always been an actor. I mean, my life is interesting. I started out in foster care, you know. Yeah, I had...
So quite a challenge.
Yeah, two older brothers, two older sisters, and myself. Unfortunately, our parents were MIA, and my brother tried to cook for us, set the place on fire, so social services came in, and... But we were very, very fortunate. One family, George and Lottie Bird, took five kids. So I was very, very fortunate.
So how did you get into acting from there?
In school, you know, it was something that was introduced to me in school. My brother was an actor at one point, or he was in a play, so that gave me a sense of, like, what it is. Like, okay, what's a play? All right, well, and then... From there, I just think, basically, I was always a lover of language, and so it's kind of language out loud.
So what is it about The Walking Dead, do you think, that has caused it to last five seasons?
A zombie show.
Well, because it's not a zombie show, you know, it's, first of all, it appeals to the kid in all of us, you know, the monster under the bed, you know, the Halloween, you know, being scared, either you love it or you don't, but you're having a visceral reaction regardless of, you know, what your take on it is. So I think that's inevitably the core of it, which is why, you know, the demographics can go from 5 to 80, you know. It's amazing storytelling. It's a backdrop to deal with the kind of human ills, you know, and it's always food for thought. It's very rich in substance, so... stuff for people to chew on, you know. I think you know, Robert Kirkman was bold and wanting to take on these heavy issues, and We have an amazing team with the special effects that makes it so real, so that the graphic nature of it is compelling to people as well. And I just think it's amazing character study.
Because initially, were you meant to be having a run as long as you did?
I don't know. It's not, you know, they gave me a 3-year contract, so they never spelled it all out, though. You know, we just went season for season. I kind of sensed that I was going to die. Most people can pick up on it, but I sensed that I was going to die when my character lied. And when he didn't kill the guy in the cabin. But I went to Scott Gimple, the showrunner. He's like, oh, no, it's not a big deal because he was trying to get me off the path. he can miss with this guy's figuring it out. And so he got me off the path. And so when it was time to go, I was surprised initially. I saw it, but then I didn't see it. And then so when it happened, I was a little surprised. But I felt like I was part of probably two of the greater episodes ever produced, My Death and The Grove. So I could say I came and I made an impact, and, you know, I was okay with it.
Because your death was quite dramatic. One of the longer panned out deaths, I guess, in Walking Dead as far as the main character's concerned.
Yeah, that's true. I think it was an homage to the man. I think he, you know, that character... Tyrese deserved that, you know. A man with amazing integrity and character, and just a good person, just a solid guy who cared about community, you know. And it's unfortunate that he had to, you know, meet his demise, but that's the world that we live in. And also, you know, Scott wanted people to have to live, deal with profound loss. We all have to in our lives, so. I think that was the sacrifice he made.
And that happens in Walking Dead a lot, doesn't it? Where main characters that you sort of build a relationship with watching, and then suddenly they're just gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's the cruel nature of the world that we live in, you know, that world. But it's a backdrop for reality. I mean, you know, we deal with tremendous loss in real life. So I think the show tries to... you know, take things on in a way where we kind of give people a window into their lives, you know, through this kind of backdoor kind of way using the genre, you know. But it's for us to be able to chew on really heavy, substantive things.
Is it a reflection on American society at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's the world, though. You know, if you look at the graphic nature of violence, and, you know, look what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in America, what's going on in Africa, and, you know, yeah, it's some ugly stuff. So I think we kind of, Scott Gimple and Robert Kirkman are able to kind of address those things, you know, in this dressed up way.
Mm. Which is what fantasy and science fiction do very well.
Always have done, yeah. I mean, and you know, you look back on the Star Treks and the Battlestar Galactica and things of that nature, and you find that we're just trying to help people wrestle with those big questions, you know.
Were you influenced by any of those in your early growing up?
I think so. I think when I look back, you know, I think in the moment I wasn't, you know, I wasn't able to contextualize it that way. But now, yeah, I feel like that. I mean, there's amazing... Star Trek was amazing, and things that it was taking on and the groundbreaking nature of it. And so, yeah, I think I think I gravitated to that kind of storytelling, you know, the let's take on the weighty issues and let's deal with it, you know, let's dramatize that and wrestle with it. I do it in my real life, so. It's fun to do it, you know, on that
in the fantasy life.
Yeah.
So, do you do some activism yourself?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm working on something right now called "Laughter Is the Best Medicine." I want to go to Ferguson August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and what we're going to do is, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, catalyst so, is it? It's yeah. a catalyst area for the United
yeah,
States.
Absolutely. So, I sort of one thing first and foremost, I think. If we can all laugh a little bit, you know, we can kind of ease some of the tension, to be able to get to the healing. So the first night will be a night of comedy for the whole community. Everyone will be represented. You know, it's not just the African-American thing. It's all people, you know. And the second day, what we're going to do is something called the Healing and Reconciliation Workshops. Mm-hmm. And we all know it from anywhere from South Africa to, you know, with apartheid and having to, the people try to come together and reconcile that to things in Congo to, you know.
To Australia.
So we want it, people are traumatized. And it's creating a divisiveness that I just don't believe is us at our best, you know, around the world. We have to come together and we are supportive of each other. So we're coming in the name of unconditional love and non-judgment. And so we're going to put together these workshops that will help the community kind of peel back those layers and deal with that trauma and come together. And then the third day, what we're going to do is it's a block party. So we're going to celebrate the community. So it's the international community coming to the local community and saying, we are one, and we're here for you. You are us, and whatever we can do to, you know, foster good relationships and kind of, a, you know, just nurture that kind of spirit of togetherness. That's what we're going to do.
So who's involved with it? Yourself and...
Well, I got a team of folks, you know, but we got Barack Obama's law professor is going to be a part of it. Ogletree, Charles Ogletree is his name. We got Michael Eric Dyson, you know, so we hope to have Cornel West, Skip Gates, and, you know, but I need others as well that, that they'll help guide me too, because it has to be a rainbow of folks involved.
Yeah, and so are you into stand-up comedy? Is that what you're going to do there?
No. I'm a fan of stand-up comedy. I'm myself a comedian actor. You know, I've done sitcoms and things of that nature. But it's just, I've always loved comedians. You know, and I've always whenever I go to the Laugh Factory and comedy and the improv and things like that, I see an array of different people and everybody's laughing. Yeah. Here we are, you know, people not even conscious, here we are together and we're laughing and we're having fun. And so we can do this, you know, we can get past those other things. So just see it as a gateway to get us to a better place.
So how can people find out about your work?
Well, I mean...
Do you have a website?
We're putting together... Yeah. I mean, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, at Chad L. Coleman. I don't really do Facebook too much. We've got to reignite that account, but it's been mostly through Twitter and Instagram. But we're also working on the website as we speak for Laughter is the Best of Medicine. So hopefully it'll be a hub for people to come and be able to have a different type of conversation. You know, no anger, no finger pointing, no judging, but just come with an open heart. And if you have something you want to contribute that's going to help us, you know, move forward, then by all means, check it out. So we're hoping to have that up by May 1st.
Fantastic. That's great.
Yeah, it's going to be.
It should be interesting.
Well, you know what? We can all come together and create a constitution, the Declaration of Independence. We can all come together and create something that's going to give people viable tools that they can use to stop the nonsense that's going on.
Yes, there is. I mean, Ferguson, as I said, was a catalyst in what's happening in many cities around America. It's not.
That's not just germane to Ferguson, but it's we've got to just really come to terms with, you know, police officers have to have a clear understanding that they are a part of the community. You are a part of the community. When you take that uniform off, you're a part of the community. So how can we help you to not make those type of decisions and do it in a way that they don't feel threatened or, you know, feel like they need to be defensive? I mean, I want to see this. Let's all be open, you know. Let's be open about this. Let's be honest. And we got your back. You got ours. But let's do better than this, you know.
Yes.
Can't be just killing people like this. It's not. It's just wrong, you know.
It is. Every second day, there's something
new. And something else, yeah. And that's why I, like, God, we've got to do this because it keeps happening.
Yes.
And it's just very unfortunate.
Okay, Chad, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much,
Chad.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Do you experience bouts of geekdom? If so, Anomaly may be right for you. In clinical studies, Anomaly's convention reports, cosplay topics, and commentary on Star Wars, Doctor Who, Star Trek, and other sci-fi fantasy genres provided a feeling of fullness while promoting optimal geekiness. Anomaly is available over-the-counter at Stitcher and in the iTunes, Zune, and BlackBerry stores. Learn more at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Anomaly. Your prescription for geek entertainment.
Well, if you're a Walking Dead fan, or you're a zombie fan, I'm sure you enjoyed listening to both Norman and Chad.
So on that note, it's goodbye from her.
And it's goodbye from him.
No.
I don't know. What did I answer to that one?
I just said that to see what you would come up, because she's supposed to say me. Goodbye from me is goodbye from her. But whatever. I hope you'll come back and listen to the next one.
See ya.
Bye-bye.